We are holding on Yud Beis Amud Aleph, the first line. We were discussing the question of which places are and aren't chayev in mezuzah. One of the things we mentioned is that that shuls and batei medrash may not be chayev in a mezuzah. So we said that if there's an apartment, if there's a room in there where the shamash or the shul stays, where he lives, then it's definitely chayev in mezuzah. Otherwise, we said the chachamim say it's pater, Rav Meir said it's chayev. And we made a couple of distinctions, the last one being that there could be a difference between shuls in a village versus in a big city. Where Rashi explained that the difference is that in a big city, everybody comes from all over the place to daven there, so you can't really say it has specific owners, as opposed to in a village, it has more specific owners, so then it's more like a house that belongs to partners, which would indeed be chayv in a mezuzah. The Rambam understands the distinction somewhat differently. He says the vote is, really a shul should be potter altogether, as the Gemara is saying over here, but because it's a makam kodesh, as we're going to be discussing, but in a village, you often have people stay in the shul overnight, and therefore it's not just a shul, therefore it doesn't really have the full kedusha of a shul in the first place. To begin with, it was made with that condition that people can sleep there, which otherwise you wouldn't be allowed to do in a shul, and therefore it's chayev in a mezuzah, whereas otherwise not. In that connection, we also talked about which places do the dinim of tsaras of houses apply to? So we said that a shul is able to become tameh with tsaras, and then we said, again, these various distinctions that we made, Rav Meir versus the Chachamim themselves, whether somebody lives there or not, villages versus big cities, that distinction could also be, so we said that as far as Negoyim and as far as Mezuzah. It comes out, by the way, that according to Rashi's understanding, at least, those two things are tied together. Any place that can become tameh with negoyim is also chayev in mezuzah and vice versa. Whereas according to the Rambam, there's not necessarily a connection between them. The Gemara was bringing the matter of negoyim as an attempted proof, but then when the Gemara said it's not necessarily a proof, it means that there could be a difference. You could have a place which is not chayev in, which is not tameh from negoyim, but yet is chayev in a mezuzah. So now here's where we're up to, the top line of your Beis Amud Aleph. You want to ask, or the Kraken and Matamim in a Goyim? So you're telling me that shuls in big cities cannot become Tomei with Tzaras, because that's the last answer that the Gemara had said. That shuls and Batei Medrash in big cities are not chayev in a mezuzah, and apparently not Tomei with Negoyim either, whereas in villages they would be. V'hatanya, but we learn in a Braisa, when it says about tsaras in houses, the pasuk introduces it by saying that there'll be tsaras in a house of achuzaschem, of your inheritance in Eretz Yisrael, meaning therefore we learn from that achuzaschem metamim in a goyim, only places which are your inheritance in Eretz Yisrael are metamim in a goyim, but in your shalayim metamim in a goyim, but your shalayim is not, because as the Gemara is going to go on to explain, according to this opinion, your Shalayim was not divided up among the Shvatim. Which within that, by the way, there's two ways of understanding. Does it mean that your Shalayim was never divided up among the Shvatim in the first place, unlike the rest of Eretz Yisrael, or does it mean that it was originally part of Shevet Yehuda, parts of it were part of Shevet Binyamin, but then later on it was ceded, those two Shvatim ceded it to become a place that belongs to all of the Jewish people. So there's a Tosfos in a few places, including in Bava Kamma, which we learned recently in Ein Yaakov, goes according to this first way that it was never divided up in the first place. On the other hand, there are some Achronim that talk about that. I think the Chazon Ish talks about, for example, maybe the first way it was originally, it was like every other part of Eretz Yisrael. Part belongs to Yehuda, part belongs to Binyamin. But later on, when it was decided that when they figured out that that's going to be the place, Hamokam Asher Yivchar Hashem, the place where the Beis Mikdash is going to be built, then Yehuda and Binyamin ceded their respective parts to become the city of the holy city of Yerushalayim, which belongs to the whole Jewish people. Anyway, all that is within one opinion that says Yerushalayim lo nischalka l'shvatim, and then the Gemara is going to say in a minute that there's another opinion that says Yerushalayim was divided up among the Shvatim, and parts of it belong to Yehuda, and parts of it belong to Binyamin, just like any place else in Eretz Yisrael. So anyway, the Tanakhama is saying that any place in Yerushalayim cannot become Tomei with Tzaras. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Ani lo shemaiti elam makam mikdash bilvad. Rabbi Yehuda says, the only thing I heard from my Rebbeim about that is that this applies to the place of the Mikdash, only the place of the Mikdash. Because the place of the Mikdash, the place of the Harabayis, we know that David bought it from a Rav Nahayavusi, and he collected money from all the Shvatim for that. So therefore you could say, Rabbi Yehuda says, that particular area, the Harabayis, was indeed not divided up among the Shvatim. It belongs in common to all the Jewish people. But not necessarily the rest of the city of Yerushalayim. Now, the point is, now, the implication, therefore, is that only the Beis HaMikdash, according to the Yehuda, is not Matam HaMinagoyim, so therefore, Shuls and Batim Medrash in Yerushalayim are Matam HaMinagoyim, but Afagav the Kraken, even though Yerushalayim, of course, is a big city, it's a walled city. So then, in that case, that means that Shuls, even in big cities, could become Tamim with Negoyim, not like the answer that we just gave. So it would mean, in other words, that even ones in big cities are on the face of it are able to be metamim and negoyim. So we're going to digress to talk about that point, about the status of Yerushalayim, and then we're going to eventually get back to, this matter of Tzaras. The answer is Ema Omer of Yehuda Ani Lo Shemaiti Ela Makom Mikudash Bilvad. Rather, you can correct the Braisa so it doesn't contradict what we said before. You can say Rabbi Yehuda is saying not Makom Mikdash, meaning the 500 by 500 Amos of the Harabais, but rather Makom Mikudash, a holy place. So according to him, then we would say any holy place in Yerushalayim, including the Shuls and the Batei Medrash, are not Metamim B'Negoyim. So according to the Chacham, so in other words, the machlokes between them would not be about the Beis Mikdash, it would not be about the shuls, it would be about the private people's houses. According to the Chachamim, they're not tamei with Negoyim. According to the Yehuda, they are. But the shuls, everybody would agree that not. That does fit with what we said before, that shuls in big cities are not metamim and negoyim. Although, of course, it would be for a somewhat different reason. Before we were saying that in general, in large cities, they're not metamim. Here, we would say that it has to do, according to the Chachamim, at least, it has to do with the special status of Yerushalayim. And according to the Yehuda, no, it just has to do with the fact that they're a holy place, and the holy places are not tamei with Tzaras. So the question is, "Mamai kam mifugi." So what's the underlying machloikas of Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim? Meaning, in other words, Tosfos teaches out, if we said that Rabbi Yehuda was talking only about the Makom Mikdash, so you would say, in other words, that the Chachamim are saying Yerushalayim in general has a certain level of kedusha, because after all, you can eat kodshim kalam and ma'aseh sheni in there, therefore it's not achuzaschem. And Rabbi Yehuda holds that only the place of the Beis Mikdash itself. But now that we're saying that Rabbi Yehuda agrees with the Chachamim that the Shuls and the Batei Medrash are not Metamim and Negoyim, it can't be the Tanakhama is saying because Yerushalayim as a whole is something special, or it can't be because the Tanakhama is saying because Yerushalayim has Kedusha, because in that case, then Rabbi Yehuda shouldn't mention anything about places of Kedusha. So it must be that the Machlokes is on a different point. What is that point? So the answer is Tanakama Sava Yerushalayim lo nischalka l'shvatim, but Rabbi Yehuda Sava Yerushalayim nischalka l'shvatim. The Tanakama holds that Yerushalayim was not divided up among the Shvatim, and Rabbi Yehuda holds that it was. Again, when we say not divided up among the Shvatim, within that there's two ways of understanding it. It can mean that originally it was divided up, and then later those Shvatim ceded it, and then gave it over to the Jewish people, or it could mean that to begin with it was never divided up among the Shvatim. Whatever the case, the Tanakhama holds that way, and Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and says it was, and therefore your Shalayim as a whole has no special status as far as Negoyim, only the Makom Mekudesh, only the places in it that are holy. Those are not Metamim B'Negoyim, because as we said, shuls and big cities are not Metamim B'Negoyim, because there's no specific owners for them, and because nobody stays overnight in such shuls. And the Gemara says, it were plugged to Dahani Tanoi. In that case, the Machloikas of Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim is the same as the Machloikas of the following Tanoim in the following Braisa. The Tanya, we have one Braisa that says, Ma hoya b'chalkes of Yehuda, what parts of the Beis Mikdash were in Yehuda's territory? Harabayas, the Harabayas, now we don't necessarily mean the whole Harabayas, what we mean is, at least, for example, as if you were walking into the Harabais from the east side and proceeding towards the west, towards the Kodesh HaKadoshim, then you'd be passing through. You'd start out in Yehuda's territory, and at some point you're crossing over into Binyamin's. So the eastern part of the Harabais, at least, is in Yehuda's territory. HaLashachos, also the chambers that were in that area. You had various chambers and rooms all over the Beis Mikdash complex that they used for many different purposes. V'ha'azorois, and the Azorais on the east side, the Ezras Nashim, the Ezras Yisrael, and the Ezras Koyanim, all of those are in the territory of Yehuda. Now, what was in Binyamin's territory? Ulam, the Ulam, the entryway into the Heichel, and the Heichel itself, are based Kodesh HaKadoshim, and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now there's one area in between that we haven't accounted for. If you look at a floor plan of the Beis Mikdash, which you can find in many different Sfarim, and you can also find them online nowadays, then you will see that we've accounted for the entire complex of the Beis Mikdash, except for the area of the Mizbeach and the area between the Mizbeach and the Ulam. So what was the story with that area? There was a strip of land that stuck out of Yehuda's territory that went into Binyamin's territory, and the Mizbeach was built in that area. Now we don't mean the Mizbeach as a whole, just the opposite actually. The Gemara explains in other places that the Mizbeach in fact was built in Binyamin's territory. What we mean is, in other words, that there was a small strip, like this you have, the Mizbeach had a Yesod at the bottom of it, the base, but it went around only two sides of the Mizbeach. It went around, the Yesod was a ledge that stuck out at the bottom of the Mizbeach, and it went around two complete sides of the Mizbeach, the north side and the west side, and then on the east and the south, it just stuck out one Amma. And you have, in particular, the Gemara mentions in Zvachim, the southeast corner had no Yesod. So there was a strip of land from Yehuda's territory that was sticking out into that area, and therefore, so Uvahim Mizbeach Banu doesn't mean the Mizbeach was built there, it means the Mizbeach should have been built there. By rights, there would have been Yisoid over there. But because it was in Yehuda's territory, then it wasn't, because the Mizbeach had to be in Binyamin's territory. So that's where we hadn't accounted for the area of the Mizbeach, but now we're saying the actual area of the Mizbeach was in Binyamin's territory. But Yehuda's territory went into Binyamin's a little bit, to the extent that there couldn't be Yesod over there on all sides of the Mizbeach. And the Gemara continues, Binyamin Atzadik HaYimitztar Aleha, Binyamin Atzadik, the original Binyamin, the son of Yaakov, was always troubled by that. L'boila b'chol yom, every day he's wishing that he could swallow that up and annex that one amma of territory and annex it to his shevet, and that way the Mizbeach could be complete and could have Yisoid on all sides of it. Shenema, choifif olav kol hayom, as the Pasuk says, choifif over him all the day. Now, the simple meaning of the Pasuk means it's talking about the Shekhinah constantly rests in Binyamin's territory, in the Beis Mikdash. Because even when the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, the Shekhinah is still there. But the Gemara is darshaning over here, Rashi explains, the word choifif also means like when a person is rubbing his hair or his skin, like for example, when a person is nervous, when a person is upset that they don't have what they want, they rub their hair, they rub their skin in anguish. So therefore it refers to choifef olav kol hayom. Binyamin is always bothered by and is always doing like that, like rubbing his scalp and whatever in anguish, in tsar, over the fact that the Mizbeach is not completely in his territory, that Yehuda's territory overlaps into his a little bit. Juts out in his territory.
How do you like? How do you like that? Yehuda saves Binyamin, and Binyamin is upset that the Mizbeach, some very small part of it, is in Yehuda's territory.
First of all, it's not that the Mizbeach is in Yehuda's territory, just the opposite. We're saying because the Mizbeach had to be completely in Binyamin's territory, therefore it had to be built in such a way without a Yesod on all the sides. Now, Binyamin, yes, he's very grateful to Yehuda for saving him, all very nice, but he
doesn't
really
look like it.
Okay, but he wants, on the other hand, look, he's not actually taking away that territory from Yehuda. He knows, first of all, this is all Baruch HaKodesh, of course, because the territories of the Shvatim weren't actually given out, weren't actually handed out to them until a few hundred years later. But we're talking about that he knew Baruch HaKodesh, that it's going to be this way. He's always bothered by the fact, and always pained by the fact that it has to be that way, that Yehuda's territory includes an area where by rights the Mizbeach should have been, where if it hadn't been that way, if the border was drawn one amma further to the east, then the Mizbeach would be able to be complete.
So which part was great? Which part of the Mizbeach was greater, the Yehuda's part or Binyamin's part?
So the thing is, we're saying there was no part of the Mizbeach in Yehuda's territory. That's what we're trying to say over here. The Gemara explains it more clearly in Zvachim. Really, we need a diagram over here, but I don't have one available. If you happen to have an art school Gemara with you, they'll have one. What it is the Mizbeach, we know, like this. You have the Yesod was 32 by 32 Amos, meaning, in other words, the longest extent of the Yesod on the two sides of the Mizbeach, where it was 32 by 32. But really, what it was is, and then you had on top of that was the next cube of the Mizbeach and so forth. But really, what you had is, in other words, the Yesod ran along the whole northern and western sides of the Mizbeach. Those parts are all within Binyamin's territory. Now, Yehuda, the border between Yehuda and Binyamin ran along the base of the Mizbeach, but one amma in, such that if Yehuda didn't have that one amma strip of land along the east and one amma strip along the south, or maybe one amma by one amma in the southeast corner, the Gemara in Zvachim has a few different opinions how the Rishonim have a few different opinions and what exactly the Yisod was shaped like. Whatever the case, if it weren't for that, if Yehuda's territory was slightly smaller by the width of that strip, then according to this Gemara, there would have been Yisod on those sides as well, and that bothered Binyamin. The fact that the Mizbeach is incomplete, what should have been the footprint of the Mizbeach, part of it is in Yehuda's territory, and therefore that there's no Yisod over there.
Why?
Because he wanted the Mizbeach should be complete. In fact, when you look at Yaakov's bracha to Binyamin, Binyamin Ze'ev Yitrof, Rashi mentions one explanation over there. It refers to the Mizbeach as like a wolf that eats up the korbanos. You have the famous Gemara at the end of Sukkah where Miriam Bas Bilga calls it that in a derogatory way, but she did it in a derogatory way. But the Mal Yosa, there is the idea that the Mizbeach is like a wolf constantly eating the korbanos for the benefit of the Jewish people. And therefore, Binyamin has a special connection with the Mizbeach, and therefore it bothered him and pained him tremendously that the Mizbeach is not, that the Mizbeach is built in such a way that it's not complete, so to speak, that it's missing the Yesod on both sides, and on two of the sides.
Is it going to be the same when Mashiach comes?
It's a good question. I don't know. Yecheskel doesn't say about it one way or the other, clearly, so I don't know. The truth is, Tosfos does mention another opinion that, again, we're discussing in the Gemara over here the question whether Yerushalayim was divided up among the Shvatim or not. Our Braisa that we're in the middle of the discussing over here is according to the opinion that it was divided up. Now, what about according to the opinion that it was never divided up among the Shvatim? Then what do you say? Why is it that it had no Yesod on certain sides? And Tosfos says, according to that, okay, it's the Kabbalah that they just had. David HaMelech had the Kabbalah going back to Moshe Rabbeinu, that the Mizbeach should not have a Yesod on all sides. So according to that, it had nothing to do with the fact that part of it is in Yehuda's territory. But according to our Braisa over here, it has to do with the fact that it's in Yehuda's territory, and the Mizbeach had to be completely in Binyamin's territory.
Why David HaMelech thought that the Mizbeach shouldn't have Yesod on all sides?
It's not that he thought. It's not that we're talking about he thought. He
was received by Kabbalah.
He received by Kabbalah from Shmuel, who received from his Rebbe, etc. Going back to Moshe Rabbeinu, that the Mizbeach should not have Yesod on all sides. If we say it's because Yerushalayim was divided up among the Shvatim, like our Braisa is saying, then the reason is because that part belongs to Yehuda, and the Mizbeach has to be completely in Binyamin's territory. If you say that Yerushalayim was not divided up among the Shvatim, then then it's just that's how it is. Then it's just Gzeres HaKosov, or not Gzeres HaKosov, whatever, Halacha L'Moshe B'Sinai, that's how it should be.
Who divided the land between Yehuda and Binyamin?
I mean, it was divided up here, Goyrol, and by the Urim Tumim. So it is Min HaShemayim. It wasn't just something random that Yeshua and his people came up with. It was Min HaShemayim. But nevertheless, it bothered Binyamin that it has to be that way. All right, let's go.
I don't get it. I mean, it doesn't make any sense why it bothered him. If it's Min HaShemayim, why should it bother him?
Because even so, you tell me, when everything that happens to a person is Min HaShemayim, does that mean that nothing that ever happens in your life bothers you? Of course it does, because, you know, for most of us, the things that bother us are various gashmiyistika things. Binyamin, being a tzaddik, what bothered him was a ruchniyistika thing. Yes, Hashem decided it should be that way. He's still entitled to feel bad about it and to wish and maybe even to daven that it should not be like that. Whatever the case.
I mean, there were two Shatim out of 12 who had the Mizbeach in their own territory, and he's still complaining about it, that he would like the whole thing to belong to him.
He would like that the Mizbeach should be able to be complete, that it should be in, that the Mizbeach is supposed to be in his territory, and he would like it for it to be complete, yes. And let's continue. The Gemara says, Lefichach, because of that, because Binyamin was so concerned and so disturbed by this arrangement, Zocha, Binyamin HaTzadik, Benasa Ushbizchon Legbura. Therefore, Binyamin HaTzadik had the schus to become the host of the Shechina. Shenema Uvein Ksef of Shachin, as Moshe says in his bracha to Shevet Binyamin, that Hashem rests between his shoulders, meaning, what ended up, we said before, when we looked at the layout of the Beis Mikdash a few lines ago, we said that the Heichel on the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and in particular the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is where the Shechina rests, was in Binyamin's territory. That was his reward for the fact that he was so concerned about this. Now, what do you mean by that? Marsha asks elsewhere in Zvachim, that, what do you mean? We just said before that everything west of the Mizbeach belongs to Binyamin. So of course the Kodesh HaKadoshim is in his territory. So one possible answer is, in fact, that it wouldn't necessarily have had to be that way. Hashem could have decided that the borders of the Shvatim weren't always straight lines. It could have been, let's say, that the Mizbeach would be in a part of Binyamin's territory that would jut out into Yehuda's. But other than that, other parts of the Beis Mikdash, including the Kodesh HaKadoshim, conceivably could have been in Yehuda's territory. But because Binyamin was so bothered by this, so the borders relative to the Mizbeach were not adjusted. They stayed as it is, because as Tosfos is saying, there was a reason, Min HaShemayim, that the Mizbeach should not have a complete Yisoid around the sides. However, Hashem rewarded Binyamin by making sure, by arranging the borders such that the Kodesh HaKadoshim came out in Binyamin's territory. That's one answer of it. Another explanation of it is actually that what it means is not just in the Beis Mikdash, but also the previous places where the Shechina was, the various places where the Mishkan was, were all in Binyamin's territory. You have, before that, the Mishkan was in Gilgal, and then in Shiloh, and then in Noiv, and then in Givon. Now, at least Shiloh, on the face of it, actually, Shiloh is in the territory of Shevet Yosef. It's mentioned in Kapitel Ayin Ches of Tillim, for example, it says that the Bayimas Ba'oil Yosef, that Hashem rejected the tent of Yosef. In other words, he rejected the Mishkan Shiloh, and it was destroyed. But according to this explanation, and the Gemara mentions something along these lines in Zvachim, that again, there was a bit of land sticking out from Binyamin's territory into Yosef's, where Mishkan Shiloh was, such that the Mishkan Shiloh and all the other places where the Mishkan was, were in Binyamin's territory. And that was his reward, Min HaShemayim, for the fact that of all the things that bothers him, it's the positioning of the Mizbeach relative to his board, relative to his territory and that of Yehuda. And therefore he was rewarded that every place where the Shechina rested was in his territory. Anyway, the point is that this Braisa obviously holds Yerushalayim was divided up among the Shvatim, because otherwise the whole discussion about that this part belongs to Binyamin and this part belongs to Yehuda wouldn't make any sense. So therefore, obviously, this Braisa holds that Yerushalayim was divided among the Shvatim, which therefore that would be like Rabbi Yehuda that we mentioned previously, which is why Rabbi Yehuda had said that the houses in Yerushalayim are Matam of Negoyim, only the shuls and the Batei Medrash and the place of the Beis Mikdash are not, because those are Mokum Mekudesh, those are holy places. Okay. On the other hand, Bahai Tana Sava Yerushalayim Loinus Kalkul Shvatim. On the other hand, the Tana of the following Braisa holds that Yerushalayim was not divided up among the Shvatim. Netanya, namely, we learn in a Braisa, Ein Maskirin Batim Yerushalayim, you are not allowed to rent out houses in Yerushalayim to the Oile Regal, Lafisha Ein Shalahen, because it doesn't belong to them. So even though, in a certain sense, it belongs to you, it's your house, you can renovate it, for example, and you can sell it as you wish, but it's not considered yours to the extent that you can't rent it to the Oile Regel because your Shalayim belongs in common to the whole Jewish people. So you have to allow them to stay there for free. Rabbi Lazar bat Tzadik Omer Aflin Mitis. Rabbi Lazar bat Tzadik says, Rabbi Lazar bat Shimon, it says on the side over here, says, not only you're not allowed to rent the house, you're not allowed to charge rent for the houses, you're not even allowed to charge rent for the beds. Because the beds also are standing on the beds themselves belong to you. They're the metalklin, but the place where they're standing on, in a certain sense, doesn't belong to you. Again, because Yerushalayim minus chalka l'shvatim. There is, in fact, an Ovestir of Nassan. Ovestir of Nassan is a medrash, not a medrash. It's more like a collection of brises related to Pirkei Avos. So in Pirkei of Pirkei Avos, it mentions the 10 nisim that happened in the Bais Mikdash, and one of them was nobody ever said there's no room for me to stay in Yerushalayim. So Ovestir of Nassan mentions this point over here about that you're not allowed to charge rent to the Oile Regel, and it says over there actually what would end up happening was the Oile Regel would be staying inside the houses, and the Balabatim would be staying outside. In other words, people would give up their houses to the Oile Regel for Yom Tov, and they wouldn't even be charging rent. Does that mean, by the way, that any Oile Regel that comes and says, I want to stay by you, you have to allow him in? I didn't find anything clearly about that, although I saw some things that suggest that maybe indeed that would be the case, that because the house, in a certain sense, doesn't belong to you, then yes, anybody who wants to come and stay there, then you would be obligated to give them a place to stay. And as the Gemara is saying over here, according to this Braisa, you can't charge them rent, and according to Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik, or Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, not only you can't charge them rent for the house, for the room, you can't even charge them rent for the fact that they're using your bed, because your bed is standing on land that that belongs in common to the whole Jewish people.
Wasn't the land divided up into shvatim, to each family and everything according to their?
That's what we're saying. According to this opinion, your shalayim is different than the rest of Eretz Yisrael in that regard. Again, you have two ways of understanding it. You have a way that Tosfos understands it in Bava Kamma. And that, for example, I think Revelvel Brisker also understands it this way, that it means that to begin with, when they divided up the whole Eretz Yisrael, as we're going to say soon, into Shvatim and into clans and into families and so forth, then your Shalayim was left out. And the other way of looking at it is it was divided among the Shvatim, just like every other place in Eretz Yisrael. But later on, when it was decided that that's going to be the place of the Bais Mikdash, then Yehuda and Binyamin gave up their respective portions to the other Shvatim, and it became the property of the Jewish people in common. Whereas again, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with that whole premise and says that no, it still continued to belong respectively to Yehuda and Binyamin. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, you'd be able to rent a house or a room in your Shalayim and charge rent for it like any place else because it belongs to you. According to the Chachamim, no. Lefichach. Now, it's an interesting question, by the way, whether this halacha applies nowadays. The Rambam, when the Rambam lists in Hilchos Beis HaBechira the various advantages of Yerushalayim, the various special dinim that apply to Yerushalayim, he just says this din generically without saying whether it applies only in the time when there's Oile Regel or not. One of the earliest Beforshim on the Rambam, the Mahari Kurkus, says that in fact, maybe it only applies in the time of the Bais Mikdash. First of all, because there's no Oile Regel now, and second of all, because unfortunately, much of Eretz Yisrael is in the hands of the Goyim, and the Jews themselves who live in Yerushalayim themselves are buying or renting houses from the Goyim and having to pay them taxes and so forth. So maybe there's less of a reason to say that it belongs, that it doesn't belong to you to the extent that you can't pay, that you can't charge rent. Maybe indeed you could. What would the Ma'ari Kurkus say nowadays that there's a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael? I have no idea. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Lefichach. Now, because we're saying that the Balabatim in Yerushalayim were not allowed to charge rent, therefore, instead, Uris Kodshim, the skins of the Kodshim, now you have the Oile Regel, are coming on, and they're bringing various korbanos. They're bringing shlomim, they're bringing korbanos chagiga, they're bringing shalmei simcha, and the skins belong to them, but therefore, because the skins instead, bala yosh pzichnin, noitlin osin bizroya, the people of the householders, the balabatim, who are letting them, the people stay over there, are allowed to take those skins even by force. Because, in other words, they're not allowed to charge rent, but they are entitled to something, and that something is that they're entitled to those skins as sort of as like a symbolic payment of rent. In fact, the idea is, Mefarshim explained, that the Chachamim wanted that, the Chachamim wanted it that way, because otherwise what's going to happen is people are going to be stingy and they're going to say, why should I allow you to stay by me? Why should I allow you to sleep on my bed if I'm not even getting anything out of it? Fine, I'm not allowed to charge you rent, then in that case I'll make sure my house is unavailable altogether. I'll make sure my beds are unavailable. I'll conveniently have my beds break right before you come. So in order to give the people an incentive to welcome the guests of Ayin Yaffa, then therefore the Chachamim said that they should be entitled to the skins of these korbanos, and that they can take them even by force. In fact, Avastid Abnasin says over there that the Oile Regel, for their part, would often make sure specifically that when they're picking an animal to buy for their korban, they would dafka pick an animal that had a very nice looking skin, so that way they could actually, and pay a little extra for it, that way they have something nice to be able to present to their balabas before they leave your shalayim. Amar Abayas, Abayas says, Shmamino, we can see from this that we're saying that the Balabatim and Yerushalayim are entitled to the skins of the Korbanos. Orach Ara Lamishbak Inish Gulfa Umash Chalosh Bizeh, it's Derech Eretzdich that when a person stays by somebody, then he should afterwards leave for the balabas, leave the empty wine barrel, which is worth some money. That's gulfa, means the wine barrel, umashcha, and the skin of the animal. If he shechted and ate an animal, or if he drank a barrel of wine of his own, that is, while he was there, he should leave the skin and leave the barrel over for the balabas as an extra bonus for the fact that, in that case, for pastures, he's paying rent. But even so, it's still nice of him to leave something over to show hakaras hatoiv for the fact that he stayed there. Nowadays, you know, you get a little something and give it to the balabas before you leave, or when you first come, you get him something nice like a bottle of wine or something. An interesting side thing about this, by the way, that we know the famous story where the during Napoleon's war with Russia, how the Alter Rebbe had Moshe Meislish go and serve as a spy to spy on Napoleon's army on behalf of the Russians, because Moshe knew various languages and he was a talented guy, etc. So there's a letter that the Alter Rebbe wrote to Moshe explaining why he's doing this. This is the famous thing where he says that if Napoleon wins and the Jewish people are going to be much better off for Gashmius, but much worse off for Ruchnius, they're going to be distanced from Avinu Shebashamayim, and if Tsar Alexander wins, it's going to be the other way around. But the first line of that letter, the Alter Rebbe quotes this Gemara over here, that it's derech eretzdich to leave the wine skin and the barrel, the wine barrel and the animal skin for the host, meaning the Alter Rebbe is hinting at that. Besides that I'm going to mention in the letter that the Russia winning will be better for us, Baruchnius, there's also the fact that Russia is our host right now. We live in it. And therefore, we should show them a certain Hakaras HaTov and work on their behalf. Which, by the way, we know eventually the Russian government did recognize the Alter Rebbe for that and gave him and his descendants a title of minor nobility, an honored citizen, which the Rebbeim were able to use that many times in the decades after that, until the Russian Revolution, to be able to work on behalf of the Yidden of Russia. Okay. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara. So the bottom line is, we digress to talk about the status of Yerushalayim. But the point is that we got into this discussion by asking that, what do you mean that shuls and big cities are not metamim and negoyim, when we see that on the face of it, according to the Tanakhama, the ones in Yerushalayim could, and even according to the Yehuda, it seems like they could, because according to him only the Beis Mikdash, or according to the Chachamim, fine, we would say they can't because the whole Yerushalayim has a special status, but according to the Yehuda, it sounds like they could. And we said that no, Rabbi Yehuda would say Makam Mekudash, any holy place, is not metamim and negoyim, therefore including the shuls. Okay, but the Gemara asks, Udikforim mi metamim and negoyim, but the flip side, are you telling me that shuls in villages are able to become tummy with negoyim? Because that was the third answer that we gave before, is that shuls in big cities cannot be tummy with negoyim, but cities and villages could. But Tanya, we learn in a brisa, when the pasuk says about saras of houses, the pasuk says la'achuza, that you're going to come into the land that I'm giving you for an inheritance. And so, in fact, twice in that pasuk it mentions the word achuza. We have the word achuzaschem that we said at the top of the amud, and now we have the word achuza. So that means ad sheyich b'shuosa. So the dinim of tzaras only take effect when they conquer Eretz Yisrael. Now, what about Kovshu Oisav Alecho Kol Shvatim? What about once they conquered out Israel, but they haven't yet divided it among the Shvatim? Or Chokol Shvatim Alechokol Beis Avos? Or they assigned a territory to each Shevet, but they didn't yet assign within that Shevet, the Nasi, and the Nasi of that Shevet was responsible for making sure that each individual ends up with their own particular plot of land. So if they didn't yet divide up among the Bate Avos, among the large clans in each Shevet, or Chokol Beis Avos, or even they did that division, Ve'en Kol Echad Makris Shaloi, but they didn't yet divide it down on the individual level. So, for example, you know that you're from Shevet Yehuda, for example, fine. You have three clans in that Shevet, Shela, Peretz, and Zerach. So let's say, fine, you know you're descended from Shela, you know you're going to be in this area of Eretz Yisrael, but you don't yet know which specific house and which specific plot of land is going to be yours, because they didn't divide it up like to that extent yet. Minayin, how do we know that Tzaras still doesn't apply yet? Tamad Lema. Therefore, the pasuk says, "Uvash aloya bayis," the one to whom the house belongs should come to the kohen, implying misha miyuchad loy. So it only applies to a house that belongs uniquely to you, Yatsuela, Sheni Yechodin Lai, as opposed to, in this case, it doesn't uniquely belong to you yet, because you don't know what particular house is going to be assigned to you. So therefore, the point is, a shul in a village should be the same thing. It doesn't have a particular person, that owns it and uses it. Everybody comes in there to daven. So why should it be Matamim in a goyim? So the Gemara says, you're right. It's clear that we have to answer that one of the previous answers that the Gemara had given, that it's not a difference between shuls in cities versus in villages. It's a difference between whether people live in the shul or not. For example, whether the shul has an apartment for the shamash, or whether, like the Rambam says, shuls in villages often have people staying in there overnight. Or that it's a machloikas, Reb Meir and the Chachamim, where the Meir would say that a shul is always chayiv in a mezuzah, and the Chachamim would say he's potter. Now, by the way, we did mention earlier in the sugya, on Yuralef Amid Beis, that a house that belongs to partners is chayiv in negoyim. So how does that fit with what we're saying over here, that only if it belongs uniquely to one person? So Tosfos Yeshanim brings up two possibilities. One is that, in fact, our Braisa is disagreeing with the previous one. The previous one would say a house that belongs to partners is chayiv in mezuzah, and our Braisa now would be saying that it's not. Or the other possibility is there's a difference between when the house originally belonged to one person and then he decided to make a partnership with somebody else, versus where, to begin with, the land was not yet divided up at the family level, and therefore you don't know which house is going to end up being yours. In that case it's potter from mezuzah. But if you had two people individually owned houses and later on they decided to make a partnership in a house, or two people bought a house jointly or whatever, then that would be different. Okay. There is, by the way, in that the halacha in the end is that a house that belongs to partners is chayev in mezuzah. Okay. Moving on to a new topic now. We said in the Mishnah, Maskinin loy koyen achar, we said, now that we discussed how the Kohen Gadol would stay in the Lushkas Parhedrin for a week before Yom Kippur, and we went through the whole discussion about the Lishkas Parhedrin, we got into this discussion of mezuzah by way of seeing whether that chamber was chayev in a mezuzah while the Kohen Gadol was there or during the rest of the year. So now the Mishnah had continued that we prepare another Kohen as a substitute for the Kohen Gadol in case he becomes Tomei. So let's figure out now how the rule is, we learned a few days ago that a Kohen Gadol, there's two ways that a person becomes Kohen Gadol. There's Shemen HaMishcha, which they had from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu until close to the end of the first Beis Mikdash. And then you have this Ribui Begadim, where you have him wear the eight clothes of the Kohen Gadol, and according to Rashi, that he actually does the Avodah again. Now let's figure out, if the substitute Kohen Gadol has to take over Yom Kippur morning, then what makes him designated as Kohen Gadol? So the Gemara says, Pshita ira by psul kodim tamid shoshachar. It's obvious that if the original Kohen Gadol became possible before the tamid shoshachar was brought, now we know, as we're going to discuss later in the Masechta, that altogether the Kohen Gadol changed his clothes five times on Yom Kippur. He did some avodas wearing the big day zahav, the eight clothes of the Kohen Gadol, and then he did some avodas, the ones that involve going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He did in big day lavan, the four white clothes. Now, among the avodas that he does in the morning before he changes into Big Day Lavan, among the avodas that he does in the Big Day Zahav is the avoda of the Tamid Shoshachar, as we're going to start talking about in the third parak. So obviously, therefore, if the original Kohen Gadol becomes possible before the Tumah Shel Shachar, then how do we designate this new Kohen as Kohen Gadol? Mechan Chenosim, Tumah Shel Shachar. Well, what we do is we have him put on the eight clothes of the Kohen Gadol and do the Avodah of the Tumah Shel Shachar. And that way, he's already confirmed as Kohen Gadol before he has to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now, we did say that L'Hachila, that's supposed to be done for 7 days, but in this case, B'di'eved, you have no choice because you can't make him Kohen Gadol in advance. It can only be one Kohen Gadol at a time. So therefore, doing it one time is enough. Ella, but the question would be, what happens if the first Kohen Gadol became possible only after the Tumah Shel Shachar? Now it's time for the Kohen Gadol to be putting on the Big Day Lavan and going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The problem is, the Big Day Lavan, the Gemara is assuming that the Big Day, the Big Day Lavan that the Kohen Gadol wears to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim are identical with the clothes of the Kohen Hedyot. The Kohen Hedyot always serves in the Beis HaMikdash wearing four items of clothing, the Mechnasayim, the Ksonas, the Avnet, and the Mitznefes. And the Kohen Gadol, when he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, is wearing only those four as well. The Pashtus, we're assuming that they're the same clothing. So then what designates him as Kohen Gadol? How is it noticeable that he's going to be the Kohen Gadol now and not just a regular Kohen? So Amar Rav Abba Abba Avnet. So Rav Abba Abba says the answer is that the Avnet is different. Within the four clothes itself, it's true, three of the four are the same, but the Kohen Hedyot up until now, as a Kohen Hedyot, he was always wearing an avnet that's made out of wool and linen together. And now, for Yom Kippur, he's wearing one that's made out of only linen. There's the Hedyot. Tosfos, by the way, on Omen Beis, Tosfos points out there is also a difference in how they put on the Mitznefes. The Kohen Gadol's Mitznefes was wound around his head differently than the Kohen Hedyot's because the Kohen Gadol needed room for the tzitz as well as for his tefillin, whereas a Kohen Hedyot needed room only for his tefillin. But Tosfos says that's not a big enough distinction to be considered a separate thing. So you have to have some difference as far as the begodim. And that difference, or Adab Ava is saying that the avnet of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, that is from the Big Day Lavan, is different than the avnet, than the belt that the Kohen Hedyot wears the rest of the year. The Gemara says that's not so simple. There is actually a machlokas on that. Honichal amanda omer avnet to show Kohen Gadol zehu avnet to show Kohen Hedyot. That works out according to the opinion that, which we actually had this before on Def Vav, that the avnet of the Kohen Gadol during the rest of the year is the same as the avnet of the Kohen HaMedyotim. All of them are made out of Kilayim. So then in that case, now, as the Gemara is going to explain soon, everybody agrees that on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol was wearing one of plain linen. So then you have a hecker. Elol amanda omer avnetah shal Kohen Gadol lo zeh avnetah shal Kohen Hedyot. But according to the opinion that the Kohen Gadol during the rest of the year would wear an avnet of Kilayim, a multicolored one, tchelos v'agamon and so forth. And according to that opinion, the Kohen Hedyot wears an avnet made out of plain linen. So then how is there a hecker? On Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol also wears one made out of plain linen. So therefore, there's no hecker in the Big Day Lavan. The Big Day Lavan of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur look exactly like the four begodim of the Kohen Hedyot throughout the rest of the year. So where's the hecker? So the answer is, Omer Abaya, loy v'shmona, Omer hapach b'tzinoda. In that case, in this scenario, where, again, the original Kohen Gadol became possible after he did the Tumah Shel Shachar, and now it's time for him to change into the Big Day Lavan, and instead he becomes Tomei, or what have you, and therefore the understudy has to take over, what do we do? To make a hecker, he puts on, loy v'shmona, he puts on the eight clothes of the Kohen Gadol, Omer hapach b'tzinoda, and he takes a pitchfork, one of that they had on the Mizbeach, and turns over he turns over one of the Evorim that's on the Mizbeach to make it burn faster. That is considered an Avoda because he's making the piece burn faster. As in fact, the Chidur of Huna. Like Rav Huna says, Rav Huna says that if a Zor, a non-Koyan, were to do the same thing, then he would be Chayav Nisa. So you see that even though the Korban is already on the Mizbeach, and eventually it is going to be burned even if you don't turn it over like that, but you're turning it over and therefore making it burn faster is considered an Avoda. Therefore, there you go, says Abaya. So the guy is wearing the eight clothes of the Koyanim, doing an Avoda, and then he changes into the Big Day Lavan and continues the Avoda of Yom Kippur. Rav Papa gives a different explanation how he becomes Kohen Gadol. You don't even need that. He says, Avodase Mechanachtoi. Just the fact that he does the Avodah itself is Mechanachim. Itself makes him that the fact that he's doing the Avodah of Yom Kippur, and that Avodah is kosher only with a Kohen Gadol, that itself makes him a Kohen Gadol. Mi loy tanya, after all, says her papa, haven't we learned in a braisa, kol ha-kelim she'osa Moshe mishichosa mekadashton, all the kelim for the Mishkan that Moshe made, they had to be anointed with Shemen HaMishcha in order to become clay shoris, in order to have kedusha, but mikan ve'elach, but after that, they didn't anoint later on when they had to replace or make new kelim, they didn't anoint them with Shemen HaMishcha. Instead, Avodasim Mechanachdon, just the fact that they use them for the Avodah itself inaugurates them as clay shoris. Hochanami, Avodasim Mechanachdon, the same thing, says your papa. You don't need Shemen HaMishcha, you don't need him to wear the eight clothes of the Kohen Gadol, even if you say that the clothes that he's going to wear now into the Kodesh HaKadoshim are exactly the same ones as the ones he wears throughout the year, but the very fact that only the Kohen Gadol can go and do that Avodah in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that itself now makes him Kohen Gadol. Okay. Now, let's talk more about that topic, about the Avnet. What were the Avnetim like? He also said of Dimi Omo, when Reb Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported, Avnetah Shokoyen Gadol, Rebbe Verbalazib Reb Shimon. Avnetah Shokoyen Hedyet, Rebbe Verbalazib Reb Shimon. There's Machloikas Rebbe and Verbalazib Reb Shimon, what the Avnet of the Koyen Hedyet looked like. Chad Amashal Kilayim, Bechad Amashal Books. One said that it was made out of Kilayim, it was made of linen together with Tchelas and Agamon and Telas Johnny, which are various kinds of dyed wool. And the other one says, Shobutz, that it was made just of linen. Now, which one said which? The Gemara says, Tistayim, we can conclude, the Rebbe who the Amar Shokalayim. We can conclude that Rebbe is the one who says that the Avnet of the regular Kohen throughout the year was made of Kilayim. The Tani, as we learn in Abraisa, Ein ben Kohen Gadol a Kohen Hedyet ela Avnet divi Rebbe. There's no difference between the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedyet except the Avnet, says Rebbe. Rebbe Lozabit of Shimon, Oima Afloy Avnet. Rebbe Lozabit of Shimon says, there's also no difference in the Avnet. Now, we have to figure out, when is this Braisa talking about? Amos. When is this talking about? Yom Kippur or the rest of the year? In name of Ashali Moshashana, are you saying that it's talking about the rest of the year, when the Kohen Gadol wears, and you're going to say that the rest of the year the Kohen Gadol wears an Avnet of Kilayim? And we're talking about whether the Kohen Hedyet does. What do you mean? That's not the only difference. Tuva Ikka. There's a huge difference between the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedyet. Kohen Gadol Mashamash B'shmoid of a Hedyet Barba. The Kohen Gadol wears eight items for his Avodah, and the Hedyet wears only four. So how could you say there's no difference between them except the Avnet? Ela Lav B'yem HaKippurim. Evidently, it must be that they're talking about Yom Kippur, where for the Avodah, for the special Avodah of Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol does wear only four items, like the Kohen Hedyet, and therefore, so Rebbe is saying, within that, there's still a difference, namely that on that day, the Kohen Gadol wears an Avnet made out of linen, and the rest of the year, wears the Kohenim the rest of the year, and also on Yom Kippur, wear an Avnet made of Kilayim, and Rebbe Elazar ben Shimon holds that all of them are wearing an Avnet made out of linen. So in that case, then that would show that Rebbe is the one who says that throughout the year they wear one made of Kilayim. By the way, Tosfos Hashanim points out, I mean, if we're talking about on Yom Kippur itself, then if we're talking about on Yom Kippur itself, then what are we talking about the Kohen Hedyet wearing any begodim anyway? The Kohen Hedyet's not doing any Avodah on Yom Kippur. All the Avodah on Yom Kippur has to be done by the Kohen Gadol. So Tosfos Yeshanim gives a couple of answers. One of them is that, after all, there are, for example, with the Talmud Shel Shachar, we're going to learn in the next Perek, Bezat Hashem, that they had to bring two logs of wood together with the Talmud Shel Shachar. You have some other Kohen has to carry those. The Kohen Gadol didn't carry those. Also, for example, we just said that there are people turning over the limbs on the Mizbeach to make them burn faster. Again, the Kohen Hedyet could do that. And also, then Tosfos Yeshanim gets into a discussion about maybe also Trumas HaDeshen, the first taking off of the ashes of the Mizbeach, maybe that was also done by the Kohen Hedyet. There is a Machloikas Rishonim, which we'll talk about, Be'ez Hashem, at the beginning of the second parak, whether in fact there were any Avodas on Yom Kippur that were done by the Kohen Hedyotim. Is it that basically the Avodah had to be done by the Kohen Gadol, but there were certain other Avodas for which they would make Piosis as they did the rest of the year and pick Kohen Hedyotim to do them? Or is it that that none of those took place on Yom Kippur? We'll talk about it, Be'ez Hashem, at the beginning of the second parak. But anyway, so there is the possibility.
I'm assuming if the Kohen Gadol was shechting the carbon, he wasn't the same person who was the cow of the blood, because it's two different.
So what you actually have, we're going to talk about that in the third parak. We're going to say the Kohen Gadol would do the shechita to the point where it's kosher, where he's cutting through the most of the two simonim. Then somebody else would finish the shechita so the Kohen Gadol could be mekabel the blood. Somebody would take over in the middle, but that's the point. By that time, the shechita is already a valid shechita. Practically speaking, not much blood is going to come out of that, which is why you need somebody to finish the shechita. But at that point, the Kohen Gadol has already done the actual avodah of the shechita. So that's not a proof. But you have, for example, so the whole second parak of Amasechta is going to be about the order of how they made the pioses, how they picked the kohenim every day for the different avodas, and the rishonim discussed the question over there, what is this perek doing in Masechet Yoma? On the face of it, there's no pious, because the kohen gadol was doing all the avodas, and so there is a discussion over there between the Baal Amor and the Ramban and various other rishonim on that question of, are there in fact pioses on Yom Kippur? Are there in fact avodas that they hand out using the pious on Yom Kippur, or are there not? And in that case, then you have to figure out what that perek is doing in our Masechet anyway. Anyway, so Tosfos Yeshanim is saying that there is the possibility that there was a voida for the Kohenim and Yotim to do on Yom Kippur, and therefore you could talk about the similarity or the difference between them and the Kohen Gadol when all of them are wearing white clothing. Is the Kohen Gadol was wearing a linen avnate, or the Kohenim and Yotim also wearing linen avnatim, or are they wearing colorful avnatim? So the Gemara says Amri. So the Gemara says no. They said this Braisa is not necessarily a proof that Rebbe is the one who says that the avnate of the Kohen Hediot was Kelayim, because maybe the Braisa is in fact referring to the rest of the year. You're asking between in the rest of the year, there's a big difference between the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hediot. We're talking about within the four pieces of clothing that the Kohen Hediot and the Kohen Gadol have in common. Is there any difference between those? And Rebbe, so we'd say that Rebbe would say yes, and Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Shimon would say no. So not necessarily is Rebbe the one who's saying that the avnet of the Kohen Gadol the rest of the year is Kilayim. Fakir, it could be the other way around. Since he's saying there's no difference except the avnet, it could be the other way around. Rebbe is saying that there's no difference because, in fact, all of them are the difference is the avnet, because the rest of the Kohenim are wearing white avnetim and the Kohen Gadol is wearing a colorful one. And Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Shimon would say the other way around. So we don't have a solid proof from that Bryce of which one said which, but he also Ravin Omar, when Ravin came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, Avnet shel Kohen Gadol b'yom kippurim, divrei hakel shel butz. No, the Avnet of the Kohen, it's like this, let's clarify. The Avnet of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, everybody agrees, is made out of linen. The one that he wears the rest of the year, everybody agrees, is Kalayim. The machlokas is about the avnet of the Kohen Hediot, whether the rest of the year or Yom Kippur, what kind of avnet is the regular Kohen wearing? So there you have a machlokas. Rebbe says it was Kalayim, Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon says it was linen. So Ravin is clarifying what Rebbe Dimi had said. Rebbe Dimi had just said there's machlokas, Rebbe, and Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon, but he didn't say which one was which, and we were trying to prove. Now, Ravin says clearly, Rebbe is the one who holds that they wore one of Kelayim, and Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon is saying they wore one of linen. So therefore, it comes out that both throughout the rest of the year, and on Yom Kippur, there's always a distinction. The rest of the year, the Kohen Gadol was wearing eight clothes, and the Kohen Hediot are wearing four. On Yom Kippur, when he's doing the Avodah of Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol was wearing four begodim that are all white, whereas the Kohen Hediot are wearing three white clothes and one colorful one, the Avodah. So there's always a distinction. And in fact, the Gemara continues, Amr of Nach Meitzchok, Afana Nami Tanena. In fact, we can show from a Braisa, we don't just need Ravin to tell us, we can demonstrate from a Braisa that Rebbe is the one who says that the Kohen Hediot wore one made out of Kelayim. Because the Braisa says, Al Besorai, now the Pasuk says that by Trumas Hadeshen, that the Kohen should wear the begodim, and the Pasuk says, V'lovash HaKohen Midoy Vad, and it says, so why does that have to say? We're just going to say that, Yuvash Al Besorai. So it says on his flesh, meaning that he puts on the clothing. So Matamad Lemi Yilbash. So why does that have to add the word Yilbash? He will put on. Lahavi Mitznefes Va'avnet La'Ramas Hadeshin Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says because in the Psukim over there in the parasha of Trumas Hadeshin, it only mentions Michnasayim and the Ksonis. So you would think that maybe for Trumas Hadeshin he only needs to wear two begodim. Therefore, when the pasuk says Yilbash, means he has to wear the other two as well. He has to wear his Mitznefes, his turban, and his avnet, his belt. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Doisa says it means something else. Lahavi bigdik kohen gadol b'yom kippurim shein ksheir the kohen hediot. It comes to include that the begodim of the kohen gadol on Yom Kippur are kosher for a kohen hediot to wear throughout the rest of the year. Again, you have the four begodim that he wore to go into the kodesh hakodashim. Those are, we're assuming, the same as the clothes for the kohen hediot. So therefore, a kohen hediot would be able to wear them throughout the rest of the year and use them even for Trumas Hadeshin. You shouldn't think. Now we're going to say soon that according to the Chachamim, those begodim actually have to be hidden away. You're never allowed to use them again. But according to the Abdoisa, not so. So the Braisa continues, Rebbe Omer Shtei Tshuvas B'Dover. Rebbe says, I have two contradictions that. Chodo Dav Netesher Kohen Gadol B'Yom Kippur Loizeu Av Netesher Kohen Hedyet. Number one, the Kohen Gadol's Avnet on Yom Kippur is not the same as the Kohen Gadol's Avnet. Is not the same as the Kohen Gadol's Avnet the rest of the year, as the Kohen Hedyet's Avnet the rest of the year. Again, because we said on Yom Kippur the Kohen Gadol is wearing a white Avnet, and throughout the rest of the year the Kohenim Hedyotim are wearing a colorful one, a Kelayim one. So therefore, that's the point. Rav Nachman is saying, you see from this Braisa that Rebbe holds of that distinction. V'oid, and furthermore, Rebbe says, how could you allow that anyway? B'godim shenishtamashta behen kedusha chamura teshamash behen kedusha kahala. B'godim, the clothes that the Kohen Gadol used for a higher level of kedusha to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you're going to use them for a lesser kedusha, you're going to use them for a Kohen Hedyot to wear them for other avodas. So it can't be that the word Yobash comes to include, like Reb Dosa is saying, that you could use them that you could use them throughout the rest of the year. First of all, they wouldn't fit anyway because the Avnet is different. And second of all, how could he be allowed to? Ela matam and lemme yobash. So Rebbe says, still though, I don't agree with Rebbe Yehuda that the word yobash comes to include the other two begadim. You don't need that. Obviously, Trumas Hadeshin is an avoida, and an avoida by definition requires the four begadim. So rather, ela matam and lemme yobash lodavas is a shocking. Rather, the word yobash comes to include that a Kohen Gadol for Trumas Hadeshin can, or for any avoida, can be using even clothes that are worn out. As long as they're not actually ripped, then they're still kosher. It's not mehodudik to do that, but if they're actually dirty, or if they're ripped, then they're pasul, but if they're just worn out, then they're kosher. Rashi brings a second explanation from his Rebbeim that it means is that bedavka, the ones that you wear for Trumas Hadeshin, should be more worn out ones based on the idea that Trumas Hadeshin is like a lower level avoda, you get dirty in it, and therefore you don't want a dirty regular big dekona. But Rashi says that's as far as Hitzos Hadeshin, as far as when the ashes on the Mizbeach grew to a very large pile, and you have to take the whole pile outside of your shalayim, then yeah, we say in the next perek that the lavash begodim achirim, that he should put on cheap or big de kohona, ones that are a little worn out or whatever, so he doesn't ruin them. But over here, we're talking about Trumas Hadeshin, is only one shovel full of ashes. There's no reason he's going to get his clothes dirty doing that. So why should he have to wear lesser level clothing? So therefore, Rashi prefers the explanation that would mean that Rebbe is saying in general, from this pasuk, we learn that worn out big de kohona are still kosher. Okay. And the Gemara points out, as did Reb Dosa l'tame, Reb Dosa, meanwhile, is going to according to his own svara, he's saying that you can use these begodim again. D'tanya, v'hinicham sham, when the pasuk says about the clothes of the Kohen Gadol in this week's parasha, that he has to leave them there, malamet sh'tu'unin g'nizah, from this we learn that they have to be hidden away, and neither he nor any Kohen Gadol was ever able to use them again. Reb Dosa, emesh le'shtamash ben yam kippurim achav. Reb Dosa says, all it means is that the Kohen Gadol can't use them a different Yom Kippur, but according to Reb Dosa, a Kohen Hedyot could use them throughout the rest of the year, they don't have to be put in g'nizah. So there you see that Reb Dosa in fact holds that they could be reused, and therefore that's what he's saying, they can be used for a Kohen Hedyot. Okay. Since we said that, so we have this case where the Kohen Gadol becomes posel and his understudy has to take over. So now, what happens after Yom Kippur? Tana Rabbanan, Ira Bei Psul, if the Kohen Gadol became posel on Yom Kippur, Uminu Achar Tachtav, and they had to temporarily appoint a different one instead of it. Actually, this is not just Yom Kippur, it applies more generally. Throughout the year, let's say the Kohen Gadol becomes posel and we need a Kohen, let's say he develops a mum and he's going to be out of commission for a while, and they appoint somebody else instead. So Rishon Chozel Avodasa, eventually when the first one becomes Tohar, or recovers, or whatever, he goes back to his Avodah of Kohen Gadol. Sheni, Kol Mitzvahs Kohenah G'dayla Olav, Divrei Reb Meir. Reb Meir says that the second one still has the dinim of the Kohen Gadol as well, namely all the dinim. He has to, he doesn't tear his clothes and he doesn't let his hair grow long if a relative of his passed away. He can't become Tomei to his relatives like a Kohen Gadol. He's not allowed to marry a widow. He has to marry a Basula. Whenever he serves in the Beis Mikdash, it's going to be with eight begadim. That's what Reb Meir says. Rabbi Yossi, a magician, Chozel Avidah. So Rabbi Yossi says, I agree the first one goes back to being Kohen Gadol, the original one. Sheni, Eneroi, Loyla Kohen Gadol, Veloyla Kohen Hadi. Second one, though, is stuck. He can't serve as a Kohen Gadol with eight begadim and also not with four begadim like a Kohen Hedyot. And the Gemara gives an example. Amar Rabbi Yossi, Maisa be Yosef ben Elim b'tzipori. It happened with Yosef ben Elim from Tzipori, she'iro by psul b'Kohen Gadol, where the Kohen Gadol of his times became posel. Uminuhu Tachtav, and they appointed this Yosef and Elam as Kohen Gadol instead. But Amrucha, and later on, the original Kohen Gadol was back after becoming Tahor. But Amrucha Chachamim Rishon Chozel Avodasa, and the Chachamim said exactly that. The original Kohen Gadol goes back to the Avoda. Sheni Eni Roy Lo the Kohen Gadol Lo the Kohen Hadiyot. And the second one, this Yosef and Elam, then can't do either one. He can't be Kohen Gadol and can't be Kohen Hadiyot. Kohen Gadol Mishum Eva. He's not allowed to ever serve as Kohen Gadol, at least while the first one is alive, because of Eva, because there's going to be ill feeling, there's going to be bad feelings between the Kohen Gadol and him. The other Kohen Gadol is going to think, from now on, I have a rival over here. And Hedyot, Mishum Milam Makodesh, Lo Meridin. And he can't, Kohen Hedyot, Mishum Milam Makodesh, Lo Meridin. He can't serve as a Kohen Hedyot because you always go up in Kedusha, you never go down. So therefore, now having served with the 8 Begadim of the Kohen Gadol, he can't now go down and serve with only 4 Begadim like a Kohen Hedyot. And in fact, Rashi says, well, so actually, yeah, so he can't be either one. Tosfos actually points out an interesting point. If we say it's Mishum Eva, then it would mean B'daraisa, he could be Kohen Gadol. In that case, what do we need the Malan Bakodesh for? Of course, once he's a Kohen Gadol, by definition, he has to serve using 8 Begadim. So Tosfos answers an interesting idea, which is, ultimately, a Kohen Gadol can be appointed and can be fired by word of mouth. Before, we were discussing in the Gemara what makes him recognizable as Kohen Gadol, but as far as actually becoming Kohen Gadol, there can be a verbal thing to tell him that he becomes Kohen Gadol, and a verbal thing to tell him that he goes away from being Kohen Gadol. And Tosfos brings with this same Yosef ben Elam, that the Tesefta on this Masechta gives a little more detail of the story. What happened was the original Kohen Gadol was Possel, so they appointed this Yosef ben Elam instead, and it was on Yom Kippur. And so afterwards he said, the Braisa doesn't say that was Yom Kippur, whatever. He served instead of the Kohen Gadol. After he left, he goes over to the king and says, the Pair of Asur that are going to be brought today as Korbanus. Yeah, it was Yom Kippur. The Pair of Asur that are going to be brought as Korbanus. Who has to pay for them? Me or the Kohen Gadol? In other words, that amounts to asking, am I the real Kohen Gadol or am I only the understudy? And the king tells him, what, you're not satisfied with the fact that you had the one-time opportunity to serve in front of the Eibishter? So Yosef and Elam realized, with the king saying that by that he had fired him as Kohen Gadol. So you see, Tosfos says that the Kohen Gadol can be appointed and can be fired just by word of mouth. So therefore, yes, in principle then, midaraisa, so the fact that he's being taken away by mouth would be reason enough to say that he can't serve as, that he goes back to being a Kohen Hedyot, but the point of Malan Makodesh, Filei Meridin, says that really he should only, he shouldn't be serving with 4 Begadim anymore, because he was a Kohen Gadol. And on the other hand, if you still have him serve with 8 Begadim, then you have the problem, Mishum Eva, that the other Kohen, that the existing Kohen Gadol is going to hate him because he's going to see him as a rival. Actually, it's interesting. Actually, Josephus tells in his history, he mentions what seems to be this particular case. He says, in the times of Ahurdus, there was a Kohen Gadol named Matisyahu, not the Matisyahu from the story of Hanukkah, this is a long time later, but who became Possel on Yom Kippur. So he ended up, so they appointed this Yosef and Elam instead, but he served on that Yom Kippur, and later on Matisyahu went back to being Kohen Gadol. So he doesn't mention the detail that we're saying over here about how afterwards Ahurdus fired him, but And of course, he doesn't mention the detail of what happened to Yosef and Elam after that, but we see from him that this is when it happened. Okay. So, Amar Rabbi Baba Chana, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Halacha K'Rabbi Yosi, the Halacha is like Rabbi Yosi, that he can't be a Kohen Gadol and he can't be a Kohen Hedyot. Now, Tosfos discusses why do we even need the Halacha to be determined about that. It's Hilchos HaMashiach. It's a Halacha that's relevant for Mashiach's times. So when Mashiach comes, the Sanhedrin can pass from it. So Tosfos and Tosfos Yishanim get into a long discussion that there is actually a Nafka Minah for it nowadays. If you have a community leader that had to leave office for some temporary reason, so what happens when he comes back? What happens? Does he get back his job? Does the substitute continue in his job? And so forth. And you have the example of Rav Gamliel and Rav Elazar ben Azariah. So the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi that yes, the original Kohen Gadol goes back to being Kohen Gadol. In that story from Josephus, for example, Matisyahu goes back to being Kohen Gadol. The other one, in this case, Yosef and Elam, can no longer serve as a Kohen Gadol or a Kohen Hedyot. Umoded Rabbi Yosi, but Rabbi Yosi does agree shem over v'over that if he is over and serves in the Mishnah using the 8 Begadim anytime during the rest of the year, avodasik sheda, then his avoda is kosher because he is roy to be Kohen Gadol, and it's only a matter of Eva that we prevent it. So similarly, Omer Rashi points out he can't serve in four begadim, because then the fact is la halacha he is considered a kohen gadol, and a kohen gadol has to serve with eight begadim except on Yom Kippur. Similarly, Omer of Yehuda Omer Rav Halacha Rabbi Yosi Umoide Rabbi Yosi she mes mission to chozal amidasim. Now Rabbi Yosi does agree that if the original kohen gadol dies, then the second one goes back to being able to serve as Kohen. It may even mean that we appoint him as Kohen Gadol, but even if it doesn't mean that, even if he's not first in line to be appointed Kohen Gadol, at any rate, it means that he's now able to serve in the Eight Begadim whenever he wants to do the Avodah. So the Gemara asks Pshita, obviously, if the whole reason why not to have him do the Avodah with the Eight Begadim is because of Eva, then now the guy's dead, what's the problem? The answer is Mauda Tema Havilet Sodom Echaim. Still, you might think that causes a certain amount of Eva because the original Kohen Gadol feels like this guy is a rival even when he's alive. He's always thinking to himself, look, this guy is in line to be able to eventually serve again with the Eighth Begadim, so he must be looking forward to me dying that I can do that. Kamash Malan, therefore, Rav tells us that we're not worried about that. He can't actually serve in the Mismikdash with the Eighth Begadim side by side with the existing Kohen Gadol, because that would really cause Eva. The Kohen Gadol feels he has a rival, but to the extent that we're going to say that he should never be able to serve with Eighth Begadim, even after that Kohen Gadol dies, because while that Kohen Gadol is alive, he's going to feel ill will towards him. That we're not concerned about.